Conananian.
I think electric vehicles with current technology isn't going to happen. I don't think it can. I'm not wishing it. I'm just trying to be practical.
Life is a highway. I will ride it on that long.
The Car Doctor.
They thought, maybe that switch ain't working right or something. Well, anyway, they took the bulb off, and then it put draining the battery.
What's really neat, Paul, is if you use a thermal imager like I was describing, that thermal imager will find that bulb hot 3 hours later.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I guess the universe is maybe telling me to slow down just a little bit, right? Listen, I get up here every week and I usually start the hours of the show, our two-hour weekly show, our two-hour get-together every week, you and I. And I tell you the events of the week or a really tough car we worked on and solved a problem or something, right? I tell you a story from the shop. And you guys seem to like the stories from the shop the best. Here's one you may or may not like. I wasn't too thrilled with it. But it's the truth. It's sort of the biggest thing that happened to me this week, and I figured I would share it with you. Friday is always a funny day in a repair shop. You're trying to get the week closed out. I like to close things out on Friday. I like to have nothing hanging over of major proportion, or at least if I've got something hanging over, I've got a good direction so I can get a jump on it for Monday. It's just the way I'm built. I like to have a beginning, a middle, and an end every week. It just seems to be what I am and who I am. This past Friday, it was no different. It was, you know, the usual, we've got to get this done, we've got to get this done, we've got to get that done. I actually had some funny emails that I responded to at my 10 o'clock coffee, one of which was, it has nothing to do with what happened later on in the day, but it seemed like a normal day other than this. I was remarking to my friend Chris from Automotive Training Group. We were talking about an email that had shown up that ASC posted an email about a webinar, a training session for 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon. And I said, what dope wrote that? Why would you write a training seminar and post it and schedule it for 4 p.m. on a Friday afternoon? That doesn't make any sense. And we sort of kicked it around and, you know, discussed, you know, do you do it at lunchtime? Do you do it later? Do you do it earlier? But 4 o'clock on Friday is just one bad time, because anything around 4 o'clock and later, you're trying to close out the week. And then we got through the rest of the day and we actually were done about, by 3 o'clock, Danny and I had everything buttoned up and customers were picking up cars and the process was beginning and we were winding down. And I said, you know, Let me just get started on one more. Let's get a jump on next week. All the parts showed up for Mary's Montego. We've got a very long-term customer with an 05 Mercury Montego, which is 17 years old now, and it needed a pile of things going on. And you know, we've got it till it's done, but I wanted to get it done. You know, I didn't want it to go on forever. And one of the things that I had to do was exhaust, and I wanted to get the exhaust off the car because it would give me a clear direction come Monday morning. And I figured, you know, let me get it up in the air. Let me get the exhaust off. I can lay out the new stuff, line it up. What else do I need to get? Am I going to have problems with exhaust studs at manifolds and things like that? And this way I've got a direction. And then I did a stupid thing. You ever see those cartoons where they're cutting down the trees? And the character is sitting on the tree limb and he's sawing off the limb. That was me. I had a Sawzall in my hands and I was cutting down the exhaust pipe. And as I'm cutting through the pipe, I'm thinking, I wonder where the muffler's going to go. And then it happened so quick. It happens so fast that you can't react to it. You know, the muffler's not going to go anywhere, and then you realize the muffler's what's holding up the rest of it, and the pipe is going to be stuck on its hanger, but the other side of the muffler only has a rubber hanger at the one end. And sure enough, as I was thinking it, it happened. Cut through the pipe, the muffler swung down, and just like those buzzsaws in the Bugs Bunny cartoons, slit the top of my left hand open. 7 stitches later, thank you. And as I was sitting in the emergency room at 3:45, and it was almost 4 o'clock at that point, I'm thinking, yeah, this is why they say 4 o'clock's the witching hour in a repair shop. And I was thinking what a stupid move it was that I was in such a rush that I had to do this and get this done. And sometimes you just got to learn to say, whoa. And I'll be all right. And, you know, it was stitched up nice. And you want to see the picture? Send me an email. But you know, life is funny, right? This morning, I was on my way to the chiropractor, and maybe this was the lesson, and I was in a very laid-back kind of mode today as I was cruising out to the chiropractor to get put back together from the week of auto repair, twisting and turning and bending and so forth. And as I'm sitting at the corner trying to make a left onto this one road, the car in front of me went because the car coming from the other direction let him go, and the guy went. And he left, and he came around, and I was in no rush. And the guy driving the car just yelled an obscenity at me about, what do I need an invitation? And I just, a lot of hostility in the world, you know? So my hand will be all right, and I thought about it, and I said, you know, maybe if I hadn't cut my hand, I might have been more aggressive, and maybe that would have led to a problem. So maybe the universe saved me. I guess the point becomes, you can reflect on it all you want, but you know what? Auto repair is a dangerous proposition, because when you least expect it, something goes wrong. Something can go wrong. And, you know, it's funny. It was trying to tell me it twice, because when I was heating the studs, I didn't catch it at first, but there was some oil absorbent mat on the ground in a corner that I didn't see. And I turned around and it was on fire because some of the embers had rolled over onto it. And I said, well, that would be a great way to end the week. I'll set the shop on fire. And then 15 minutes later, I cut my hand. So I guess the universe is trying to tell me, get out of the shop now. Go home. It's Friday. Take the day. But that was my week. That's how my week ended. It did end on a positive note, though. The 16 Chevy Traverse that I've been laboring over for the past 4 weeks is fixed. To recap, this was a 16 Traverse that had set a pile of codes, a half a dozen or so fault codes, everything from bank one catalytic converter issues, lean fuel trim codes, and several other things that it reacted to from a result of a leaking power steering hose into the O2 sensor connector. And General Motors wanted to replace the entire wiring harness. And in doing so, I couldn't justify it. Not on a 42,000 mile vehicle, six going on 7 years old, just for one connector that was soaked with power steering fluid. I cut it back. I found a connector and replaced that connector. And we were rubbing EVAP monitors, if you recall, the last time we spoke, the EVAP monitor. I couldn't get it to go. That vehicle went 326 miles before it ran the EVAP monitor. It took that long under the right conditions, even though we were trying to, you know, nudge it along with correct level of fuel and, you know, ambient temperature starts and doing proper things. And I guess my one conclusion I came to is that the newer the vehicle, the more complicated the emission controls, the more complicated the psychology and the methodology of what they're trying to achieve. And it just made me think of, you know, there's just no easy path anymore. It's all technology driven. And until that vehicle feels like passing, that's when it passes. So, but that car is fixed down the road, and we did it without doing a wiring harness. And, you know, the customer's happy, so that's on its way. That's what I got. That was my week. It started good. It ended good. You know what? I still got my hand. I can still move all my fingers. Didn't even bleed. It just sort of slit the top of the hand. And what can I tell you? I was going to draw two eyes and a nose on it, and I could make like a little puppet, but that's a whole nother story. So listen, let me pull over and take the pause, and we can come back and kick the garage doors wide open. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
Little GTO, you're really looking fine. Three deuces and a four speed and a 389.
Need advice on how to maintain that classic GTO, Ron is the guy. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Jim in Delaware, 94 Ranger. Jim, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
I have a 94 Ford Ranger 4.0.
Okay.
Runs like a top, Ron.
Okay.
Only problem is when I shut it off, leave it set for a minute or so as I work, when I go to turn it back on, it check engine light comes on, and it runs real rough. If I leave it set there and idle for a little bit, it'll be fine. I drive it maybe a mile or so, and it'll start to clear out and runs like a top ever since.
Okay.
I have two codes that I off of. This isn't a $5,000 code reader. 181 and 189.
Okay. And do those codes set consistently?
Meaning,
if you were to clear them, do they come back?
Yes.
Okay. So they come back on a regular, continuous basis. Okay.
It'll run fine after a short period of time.
All right.
And mileage is good, but it just muffs up on me.
All right. So those fault codes are for rich limits on the O2 sensors, right and left bank have been reached. It's telling you that the PCM is seeing maximum O2 sensor operating rich limit. So it's seeing a rich fuel condition that's causing this. Do you have the ability to check fuel? Do you have the ability to check fuel pressure, Jim?
No, sir.
It would be nice if we could get a gauge on the system, and then does it hold residual pressure? Is it bleeding down? This should have an auxiliary fuel pressure regulator in the rail. And I wonder if the fuel pressure regulator is ruptured, allowing it to bleed off. And the reason you're seeing the rough running is because it's just drawing fuel.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. So I wonder if do we have a ruptured fuel pressure diaphragm regulator in the rail? Do we have a bad canister purge valve? Okay. Do we have a bad mass airflow sensor? You know, something's driving this rich. So we've got to try and diagnose this without any exotic tools. One of the things I would like to try is a 4.0 and 94 should run if we unplug the mass airflow sensor. All right, it'll run in a bypass. If you unplug the mass airflow and go to start the truck, does it start and run? If it starts and runs, I'm wondering if that mass air is reaching its maximum rich limit, or I'm sorry, if it's reporting incorrect air causing the engine to reach maximum rich limit. Does this vehicle sit for any length of time?
Just overnight, and then I have a little business, and I'm here for 10 minutes, and I'm going to the next job for 15 minutes, and I'm here for, you know, it's off and on, off and on, off and on. So I just let the car, if I let the truck run, it'll run all day.
It's
no problem.
It's only when you shut it off.
Yep, and then go to start it.
Okay. So then my question is, and then I guess I could also have, do I have a bad injector? Do I have an injector staying stuck open? I got to tell you, the first thing I'd love to see fuel pressure on this truck. And when the problem happens, does it hold residual fuel pressure or does it bleed off?
Okay.
And, you know, when it bleeds off, is it bleeding off because if it has a pressure regulator in the rail, which it has to have one somewhere, is that ruptured or do I have a fuel injector physically stuck open?
That makes sense.
And it's bleeding off fuel. I bet if I bet if you hold your foot right to the floor as if you were clearing out a flooded engine, I bet it would start faster. You could try that. Does it smoke? Is there black smoke that comes out of this when it does finally start?
No. Not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
Would having the injectors cleaned, you know, at a shop where they run the junk through it, would that help me? Or?
Well, before I did that, I'd spend an hour of the shop's time explain the problem to them, because it sounds like it's a problem that can be found. You know, half the problem with diagnostics is getting a direction and the ability to reproduce the issue. This issue is reproducible. I would go in and explain it to them like you've explained it to me, and request, okay, can they verify proper fuel pressure throughout the operating range of the engine and residual fuel pressure, meaning when you shut the key off, fuel pressure on that is somewhere between 30 and 33 PSI, if I recall correctly, and it should hold that residual pressure for up to 20 minutes. And I bet it drops like a stone. If it doesn't drop like a stone and it holds the same fuel pressure, key on, engine off, if it's within 5 pounds, so if it's 27, 30 pounds, something like that, and it stays there, and when you go to start it, fuel pressure doesn't budge, this is not a fuel pressure issue, we can move on. Then I'm going to start to think about a mass airflow sensor that for some reason is out of calibration or creating an issue. And, you know,
that can be replaced?
That can be replaced, sure. All of it can be replaced. You know, finding parts might be a little bit of a task. The vehicle's almost 30 years old.
Come on, man.
No, listen, I'm just saying that finding parts is an issue. I'm not saying don't fix it. You know, and the reason I was asking about, does the vehicle sit or has it sat for any length of time? Did the vehicle sit and you started driving it recently and that's when the problem developed?
No, I tell you what, it sat for years and years and years, and then I got it running maybe 2 years ago. Ran like a top.
And then it just developed this recently?
But, yeah.
Okay.
And one other thing, I don't know if this had anything to do with it. I had a stroke, Ron, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I had for heat, what thermostat, I had the thermostat replaced because when I'd start and run it, it was on the low side. And then sometimes now when I start it up, it'll run for a long time, you know, on the low side of the normal, and then it will jump back up. Does that mean anything?
Before I were to consider that, Jim, I would want to verify that by scan tool. I don't want to trust the gauge on the vehicle. You know, the gauge on the vehicle, the accuracy of that gauge, it could be off by 5 degrees and cause a wide sweep on the temp gauge. I would rather see it by scan tool. Temperature is something to consider, but let's do some basics there. Let's look at that. Let's look at fuel pressure and go from there. Call me back. Let me know. I can help you with some more. I'm Ron Anani, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Car Doctor. You know, just real quick for our previous caller regarding the Ranger from Delaware, for Jim, you know, coolant temperature is of a great deal of importance. Even on an older vehicle, it doesn't matter. We recently had an 09 Honda in the shop that was having issues with a check engine light getting set. It was setting a coolant temp fault code. And when we looked at it, we came to the conclusion that it was missing the mark by 6 degrees. Now, it wasn't something that we could see on the dash gauge. The dash gauge didn't budge in that particular case. And, you know, all dash gauges seem to have a different degree of sensitivity. My point is, looking at the scan tool, we were able to determine that it was operating below temp, you know, according to spec. And as a matter of fact, to verify the spec beyond the information systems we have, we went out to motorrad.com, our go-to. Motorrad.com has some really great solid thermostat information there, as well as specs of when and how they open. And they also will tell you, you know, single pellet, double pellet, all sorts of construction information of a thermostat. So when you're looking for a lot of the down and dirty, motorrad.com will give it to you. But we put a Motorrad stat in it. That vehicle was fixed off by 6 degrees, setting a fault code. So, you know, only could tell by looking at a scan tool. We don't trust the dash gauge. Just very, very important. Let's get over to the phones again. Let's go over to Lisa in Illinois, 08 Lincoln. Lisa, what happened? It sounds like the engine went bye-bye. What can I do for you?
I was trying to find out once it was lurching and then it stopped and took it to a mechanic. They indicated that they thought it was the starter.
Okay.
Took the starter out. And then what they told me was that they tried to manually turn the engine.
Crank it by hand.
And they couldn't.
Okay.
Therefore, it was locked up and it's a piece of junk, I guess, now.
Right. Thank you. So you know, just tell me the story. Were you just driving and stop and go traffic or highway speed or something and it just stopped?
Just running errands and went to a dental appointment, and it died in the parking lot. But it restarted and then kind of chugged and then died again.
Okay.
Before that, there weren't any problems with it.
Right. Any recent service work done to it?
Not other than oil changes. No other service work.
How long prior had the oil change been done?
I'm not exactly certain, but it was over the recommended date of change, but there weren't a lot of miles on it.
Okay. Did they happen to say, and my concern would be that you had the oil change the day before, and did they put the proper amount of oil in it, et cetera, or could they have put an oil filter on it that leaked that was defective, but it doesn't sound like it. Sounds like the oil in the filter had been done 3, 4, 5 months prior, and then here you are with an engine that just seized up in a parking lot. Did the shop say anything about any vital fluids missing? Low on oil, low on coolant, anything like that?
They said it was a little low on oil, but not critically low.
Right.
And that the oil was not thick.
Okay. And how many miles were on this car?
197,000.
Okay. Guess what? You know what the next question is?
Uh-uh.
What color?
I'm afraid to ask what.
What color?
It's white.
No. What color is the next car going to be?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm sorry. You know, if they tried hand cranking it and it doesn't move, they're saying it's seized. You know, at 200,000 miles, you start to lay out the dollars, you know, in your head. An engine is easily $4,000 to $6,000. What kind of shape is the rest of the body in? The vehicle's 14 years old.
The rest of the body's almost perfect except for a scratch along the side that my daughter did.
Right, right.
It's just in the paint.
You know, the concern is that you'd have to put, conservatively, you're going to put, I bet you $4,000 to $6,000 in an engine. Then you've got to ask yourself, is that the original transmission? Is it the original trans?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so, you know, would you put $6,000 into a 200,000-mile, 14-year-old car with an original transmission? If the transmission failed after the engine, would you fix that too?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
You know, it starts to snowball. Now, if you go out and look at new vehicles, and the vehicle that you choose, to give you a little bit of empowerment here, if I can, if the next vehicle that you're looking at is you want something the class of a Lincoln MK, you know, an MKX, you know, you're going to go out and spend $40,000 to $60,000, you know, maybe $15,000 to put this car back on the road with a fresh engine, a fresh trans, you know, go through brakes, tire, suspension. Maybe it's worth it. But, you know, you got to play what if. You really got to play what if here, Lisa. You know, what if this breaks? What if that breaks? Is it worth it? what you're describing to me is a very reasonable explanation of an engine that failed. All right, you're saying all the right things. They're saying all the right things. You know, it's you know, it's tough. It's not your fault. It's not because the oil was overdue by time. How overdue by time was the oil?
It wasn't overdue by time.
It was overdue.
Did I say that?
Yeah. Was it overdue at all?
It was just a little overdue by miles.
What's a little? 500 miles?
Yes.
Yeah, 500 miles isn't going to do it. So it's not your fault. So get rid of the guilt. Get rid of the guilt. You know.
Thank you very much.
Get rid of the guilt.
It's so hard because I've got limited means.
Yep.
And
yeah, I could tell
I
that.
Feel
yep.
Better in a bare car.
Yep. Yep. Well, and that's, you know, so if I were talking, you know, if we're having the conversation and it's limited means and so forth, the next thing you have to think about is is it time to look at something that'll give you fixed exposure in terms of, do you go out and is it something in a lease that gives you the ability to, you know, plan, hey, here's your projected expenses for the next 2 or 3 years till you get yourself back on your feet financially, whatever the case might be, if that's the issue. And, you know, that's just something to think about.
You know, I hadn't considered that before.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know what? Cars are a lifestyle. I don't care if you live in Illinois, New Jersey, California, Florida, or any point in between. All right. It sounds like I'm going to guess here. So, you know, let me stick my neck out. You know, maybe you're a single mom or, you know, you're on a limited budget, something along those lines.
Retired.
Okay. All right. So you're on
a single mom.
Well, but you get my point. You get my point, right?
Understand.
Yeah. You know, it's you're retired. You're on a budget. You're trying to hold down expenses. You know, it's real simple. Look at your income level over the next couple of days and go, I've got, you know, if you can cut $200 to $400 free from, you know, the budget and say this is going to go towards the car every month, guess what? You're now going to enjoy that lifestyle.
Okay.
But the issue becomes you've got to find the right car, the lowest down payment. You've got to realize that this is money you're never going to get back. You're going to go from being, you know, you haven't had a car payment in what, probably 10 years?
Five.
Okay. So now you're going to go back to having a car payment forever. So you got to think about that.
They told me that they had done the full inspection. Everything was perfect. And I would be assured of being able to put a whole lot more miles on it than I have.
Right.
And that didn't happen.
Right.
And I understand it's buyer beware.
Yep.
But I don't know enough about cars or car engines to know whether or not, which is why I called, to find out whether or not it was worth towing somewhere else and getting a second opinion or whatever you call it with a car, having it put on a computer system.
Right. I'll tell you what. I'm going to hold you over. Let me just hold you over real quick. Let's pick that up when I get back because I don't want to rush through this. I'm Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. We'll be back with Lisa from Illinois right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. Lisa from Illinois, you're still there. 8 Lincoln.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was caught up in the commercials.
That's okay. That's okay. At least we know we're writing good commercials. So, you know, your question before we took the pause was, do you get it towed somewhere for a second opinion? So let me ask you this question. You're a retired single mom, right? Who's been working on the car all this time? Is it Quick Lubes? Is it one regular guy? Is it, you know, somebody, a couple of different shops? What's going on?
It was a couple of different places, but I mean, I think they're reputable. They're still in business.
Right.
It was like a regular lube company or business. And then the other one was the same thing, just a different type.
So let me ask you this question. Why do you go to 2 or 3 different repair shops?
Because of my schedule. It was not repairs. I didn't have repairs on it, but to get the oil changed. Okay. And it was only because I of my schedule when they could get me in.
Right, right.
I'm busier than I am now.
Yeah, no, and I get that. And listen, one of the things I always like to point to is I think auto repair is really important. To me it ranks right up there with you pick a doctor, you pick a lawyer, an accountant, and you pick a mechanic. And, you know, one person gets to know Lisa's cars, because the car is actually, to me, you know, it's so important that it's safe, that it's reliable, and that you're dealing with somebody that you have a relationship with. And, you know, one of the things I just want to ask you to consider when we end our call today is, you know, do you want to be a name or a number? Do you want to be in a place where they...
Name always.
Yeah, you want to be a name, right? You probably go to the same doctor for years and years. You like their bedside manner. You like the way they explain things. You trust them. There's a relationship there, right?
That's right.
And I think that's really, to me, my opinion, from my corner of the world, I think that's a lot to be said about auto repair. And, you know, do you tow this somewhere else? I don't know what that's going to get you. I think that's, you know, going to kind of bring it along the lines of, you know, you're just going to have to hear the same story all over again. And then do you put another $5,000-$6,000 engine in it all over again? And, you know, and what kind of shapes the rest of the vehicle? And do this. Okay, let's end it here. Do this. Go look at your budget. How much car can Lisa afford? How much can Lisa put down on a down payment? How will that affect her monthly budget? And then who's going to work on it, and where are you going to purchase that car from, used or new? What's out there? There's a lot of issues with buying cars right now because of the pandemic and chip shortages. But, you know, make an intelligent decision, not emotional, based on what's in Lisa's wheelhouse at this point. And then we can talk about it next week or the week after if you need more advice. But you need to get some numbers together and a direction in your head. Yes, it sounds like this vehicle needs an engine and it's not worth putting money into based on its age, because of the potential of other things that could go wrong that you may or may not be financially prepared to take care of as well. 200,000 miles, you did pretty good. Call me back. We'll talk about it. 855-560-9900. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's get over to Ken in Wisconsin, 99 Mitsubishi with no headlights. Ken, welcome aboard, sir. How can I help?
Yes. I've turned the headlights on one day to the car. Well, they didn't work. So I went out there and I checked the fuse. The high and low beams didn't work. So I checked the fuse. All the other lights worked, the running lights and all that. I wiggled the socket on each light, and they came on.
Okay.
But the sockets were very hot to the touch, and I found where the black ground wire on the driver's side, it melted the socket itself, but not the insulation on the wire.
Okay. Are they standard bulbs, Ken?
They're the HB2.
So they're a high output bulb?
Yeah, 55, 65 watt, but I guess they're called 9003s now.
Right, but are they any kind of a fancy aftermarket high output bulb, or are they a standard wattage bulb?
No, this is original on this car.
Okay. So you put connectors and bulbs in it,
I didn't put bulbs in,
right?
Because those still work. I put a new socket on from O'Reilly,
right,
and it worked fine. Is that from a bad ground, dirty, old connection? Is it normal to be very hot to the touch?
Well, they are hot to the touch. They can be hot to the touch. You've gone this
far. I'm talking about the socket itself.
Right, they do get hot. The Bakelite gets hot and it gets brittle. What I would tell you, let's do it like this. If it had a bad ground, okay, what would happen to current flow through the circuit?
Well, that's what I think. I think, you know, this has got this 18-gauge wire on, which is really thin.
All right.
I think only one strand was probably grounding out of that.
So
strands or eight.
Are you saying you repaired the ground from the broken wire? You put a solid ground, and now is it hot to the touch? Okay.
Yeah, I replaced the whole three-prong socket. Use the old bulbs. It works fine.
Is it still hot to the touch?
Why, how that Is it just so old that would cause this?
Well, is it still hot to the touch, or since you changed the socket, it's working?
No, that one's cool, but the other one I didn't change because the socket didn't melt.
Okay. you know what, Ken? It's probably a question better suited for a longer time, but yes, broken wires can create electrical issues, so you've probably solved it. Check the other one, and you might want to replace that as well. Appreciate the call. I'm Ron Anini in the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.